Today, misdirection rules. The Property Imperative Weekly to the 15th of February 2020. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In this week's digest, we examine the current misdirection, which is keeping markets bullish despite the pressures in the system. The newly stated hopes of more property price rises in Australia, despite fundamentals, and the head-in-the-sand posture of the regulators. As normal, we start with the global scene, but if you want to jump directly to the Australian segment, the time is shown below. And by the way, two quick alerts. First, we're running our next live stream event on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney time. Here is the link. And it's also in the comments below, and you can ask a question live or beforehand by sending them through via the DFA blog, and the link for that is also available below. And second, we discussed the coronavirus, or COVID-19, in yesterday's show. So go there to hear the latest on the possible economic outfall as it runs its course. Investors anticipate a possible V-shaped economic recovery from the virus, even as the effects continue to be felt. Nearly 86,000 domestic and international flights in and out of China were cancelled from January the 23rd to February the 11th. That's 34% of scheduled services. The capital markets are heading into the weekend, still looking past the coronavirus despite the new cases in Hubei. Tokyo apart, even in the Asia-Pacific region, equity markets in Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, South Korea and Australia all advanced. The MSCI Asia-Pacific Index rose for the second week, and European shares also little changed, and the Dow Jones Stock 600 has risen by about 5% over the past 2 weeks. US shares are firm, and the S&P 500 has gained about 4.6% over the past 2 weeks. US equities fluctuated after the release of steady, if uninspiring, figures for retail sales, and as investors assess contrasting data from China on how the coronavirus is spreading. The S&P 500 index swung between small gains and losses on Friday amid lower-than-average volumes. Energy firms and financials slipped, while investors crowded into havens like utilities and real estate. US retail sales climbed in January for a fourth straight month, though the prior month's gain was revised lower, while consumer sentiment hit its highest since 2018. Retail sales rose 0.3% in January, which was right in line with expectations. Excluding autos, spending growth slowed to 0.3% from 0.6%. And the University of Michigan Sentiment Index was stronger than expected despite all of the virus concerns. The market is saying the US fundamentals are strong and the economy still continues to grow, debunking expectations of stagnation in 2020, at least for now. The Dow Jones closed down 0.09% to 29,397. The S&P 500 was flat at 512.49, while the Nasdaq hit a new high of 9,731, up 0.2%. The fear index, the VIX, was down 3.32% to 1368 as the markets looked past the risks. Jerome Powell's appearances before Congress this week were pretty bland, but the Federal Reserve is making a strong statement elsewhere. The last three-term repos were oversubscribed, and they announced that starting next week, the Fed was cutting the amount it would offer by $5 billion to $25 billion. It pre-announced it would taper by another $5 billion in early March. It would only make sense to do this if it concluded that the increased demand for the term repo reflected banks being drawn to the cheapness of funds rather than it representing an underlying problem. But note, the Fed is still buying treasuries and its balance sheet is still expanding, so QE continues. The dollar index was firm at its best level since October. It's only fallen once in the past 2 weeks and is trying to establish a base above 99. Last year's high was near 99.65. It closed at 99.61, up 0.09%, a sign of continuing dollar strength. The US dollar is king because coronavirus helps the greenback. It shines a light on the country's resilience and draws in safe haven demand. While US data has been mediocre, we haven't seen extensive deterioration, and that alone has been enough to reassure investors that while not immune to China's troubles, the US economy will outperform. The US 30-year bond settled at 2.038, down 1.91%, while the T10 slid 1.77% to 1.588. And the 3-month fell 0.5% to 1.579. Thus, the yield curve inversion has corrected for now. And there is a debate running as to whether an inversion really signals an oncoming recession or not. Bloomberg chimed in on this, saying a growing chorus of voices is being swayed by another notion. The signal might just say more about the state of the world than the US business cycle. Treasuries now make up more than half of all global haven assets, double the share they accounted for during the financial crisis. That complicates matters when long and short-term yields flip. What used to be a reliable American recession indicator is instead a barometer of investors diving for cover worldwide. At the height of the coronavirus angst and an equity sell-off at the end of last month, it briefly inverted for the first time since October. Bond yields typically rise alongside the duration of debt because they provide compensation for the effects of inflation. If rates on a 10-year note is lower than a 3-month bill, it suggests investors have a pessimistic view of growth and inflation a decade from now. By 2022, US government debt could account for 2/3 of the world's pool of haven bonds, thanks to large issuance and quantitative easing by other central banks. So in fact, when US Treasury yields fall due to shocks outside of the US, that may or may not have an impact on the US economy. It often provides added stimulus. It's a view Federal Reserve officials are paying close attention to as global risks from the virus mount. In an interview with Bloomberg TV on Friday, Fed Vice Chairman Richard Clarida played down the inversion and said the negative spread is, quote, really driven not so much by an outlook for the US economy, but globally. When there's uncertainty, money flows into America, he said. So current yield moves don't reflect the US outlook, or in other words, the yield curve in the US is increasingly reflecting the fears of the rest of the world. For almost 5 years, foreign investors have been piling into the US stock markets, chasing the stronger US dollar and continued advancement of US share prices. It's almost like there is no other place on the planet that will allow investors to pool capital into such a variety of strong assets while protecting against foreign capital risks. Yet, one big question remains: when will a price reversion event hit the US stock markets? It's a matter of risk. The rally to the peak will continue in the US for as long as risk factors stay mildly calm for the US. But once risk levels elevate to a point where US investors and the economy become threatened, then traders will likely begin to bail out of overvalued sectors like technology and into safe haven investments. It may happen quickly and violently at some point. And remember, much of the growth is still driven by cheap debt funding share buybacks, not real business improvement. Gold was little changed on the day and the week at 1,586, while WT oil snapped a 5-week 20% slide to be up 1.58% to 52.23. Bitcoin continued higher, up 1.02% to 10,308, though there was an interesting Bank of England working paper out this week entitled Blockchain Structure and Cryptocurrency Prices, which argued that speculative activity can crowd out monetary use. This crowding out undermines the ability of a cryptocurrency to act as a medium of payment, lowering its value. Higher speculative demand can reduce prices contrary to standard economic models. Crowding out also raises the riskiness of investing in cryptocurrencies, explaining high observed price volatility. In London, the UK cabinet reshuffle was not much of a factor until Chancellor Javid unexpectedly resigned. rather than sacking his top aides, according to reports. Although Javid had relaxed the fiscal rules, his departure has boosted speculation of a bolder push for spending increases and tax cuts. This bolstered sterling in part because it is seen as positive for UK growth prospects and takes some burden off monetary policy. The FTSE slipped 0.58% to 7,409, while the Financial Services Index lifted 0.31% to 803. For the week, sterling has been the strongest of the major currencies, gaining a little more than 1%. The pound US dollar went to 1.3047. Royal Bank of Scotland reported a 27% rise in pre-tax operational profits for 2019 to £4.2 billion and a 93% rise in profit attributable to shareholders to £3.1 billion. Both measures were well ahead of what analysts had been forecasting. The strong profit growth shows continued momentum at the state-owned lender. The bank will abandon its 3-century-old name and slash its markets business as the lender steps away from its tumultuous past. RBS will be renamed NatWest Group PLC, and it's almost halving the assets in NatWest Markets, which houses its investment bank. Chief Executive Officer Alison Rose also said the bank will cut the net greenhouse gas emissions of its operations to zero this year and will be climate positive by 2025. When the company will capture more carbon than it emits. It will reduce the impact on climate change of its financing activity, which can include lending and underwriting by at least half by 2030, and it also pledged to double its funding and financing for climate and sustainable finance to £20 billion by 2022. The bank said it would stop making loans and underwriting debt for companies with more than 15% of activities related to coal unless they have credible transition plans in line with the Paris Agreement's temperature goals by the end of 2021. And RBS also will fully phase out coal from its business by 2030, and it will stop financing major oil and gas producers without a Paris-aligned transition plan by 2021. So more evidence of mainstream businesses stepping up. Their shares fell 6.82% to 213.10. The Eurozone confirmed quarter four 19 growth of a measly 0.1%, but revised down the year-over-year pace to 0.9% from 1%. The new news, though, is that the German economy defied fears after the December plunge in industrial output down 3.5% in December from November and managed to avoid a second contraction in three quarters. Europe's largest economy stagnated in the fourth quarter. The significant development this week is that the competition to replace Merkel as Chancellor was thrown wide open after her hand-picked successor, known by her initials AKK, stepped down as party chair. Merkel's critics to the right seem to have the early advantage. A national election will be held next year. The euro fell to new three-year lows near 1.0825 and ended at 1.0831, down 0.08%. In fact, it fell every day last week and has risen once this week. The German 10-year lifted 0.88% to minus 0.397. The Stoxx Europe 600 index closed lower on Friday but was up for the week at 430.70. Since January 31st, the German DAX has increased by almost 5.4% to a record high. Markets around the world are racing higher for now. On February the 12th, China confirmed 15,152 new cases of coronavirus, with 254 deaths recorded in a single day. The Chinese authorities have already confirmed that as many as 1,367 people have died due to coronavirus, and the total number of confirmed cases in the country has risen to nearly 60,000. As we discussed, at present, economists are uncertain regarding how much the coronavirus outbreak will impact the global economy. During 2002-2003, China commanded around 4% of the global economy. However, the Asian economic powerhouse now commands more than 16% of the global economy. In fact, China has become the backbone of global supply chain systems. Its low-cost intermediary products are used as inputs to several high-tech corporations. Similarly, the cheap Chinese electrical and electronics final goods are immensely popular worldwide. The drop in global growth could be significant yet. The US dollar yuan rose 0.16% to 6.9770, while the Shanghai index was up 0.38% to 2,917. More Chinese government support for their economy is expected in the days ahead. And it's still too early to tell just how much of an impact the virus will have on global quarter one GDP, but for now, the market is operating under the assumption that normal business activity will resume in March as the quarantine period exhausts the infection. Now, that may be extraordinarily optimistic given the long incubation period of the virus, but for now, investors continue to shrug off the economic impact of the pandemic as essentially a one-off affair. Hi, it's Liz Interruption, but if you're getting value from this post and have not done so, please consider subscribing to this channel or ring the bell for custom alerts. Plus, please consider supporting our efforts. You can make a one-off donation via PayPal, here's the link, or subscribe via Patreon for as little as $3 US a month or more to get access to exclusive additional content. Alternatively, you can also donate using Bitcoin, here is the QR code. The links are in the comments below. I really appreciate your support, which enables us to continue to make more great content. Thanks very much. Now, back to the current show. And so, to the local markets. CBA and NAB both reported better than expected results. And you can see our show, the CBA result, a matter of perspective. While mortgage lending is growing a bit, margin compression looks to be an ongoing problem in the current low interest rate environment. And banks continue to cut returns to depositors, which came through in our financial confidence index. See our show, Household Financial Confidence Finds a Floor. And as we discussed yesterday, both consumer and business confidence are well down. CoreLogic reported auction clearances at 67.7% on 1,167 auctions, more than this time last year. Sydney was at 77% and Canberra at 75%, and they were the strongest, with Perth sitting at just 36%. And there were more uncleared auctions in Melbourne than Sydney. Still, these are low volumes compared with a couple of years ago. Their property price index continues to show average daily rises in most states, Perth apart, and solid growth over the last quarter, except Perth, where the annual decline is still more than an average of 21%. But again, these are averages, and there are significant variations across locations and property types. And CoreLogic also argued that the price growth is correlated with stronger mortgage lending, saying that total housing finance for the purchase of property increased 4.4% in December in seasonally adjusted terms, the highest monthly growth rate in over 3 years. It signifies an additional $832 million in borrowings for property in December based on ABS data. They say housing finance is a leading indicator of dwelling market performance by about 3 months. When there is an uplift in the value of new housing finance, there will be a likely increase in dwelling market values. Now, I have a couple of issues with this. First, the ABS data is about 2 months lagged. And secondly, the seasonally adjusted series is fraught as we are in an unusual year and past years may not help. As we discussed in our post, A Deep Dive into Lending Flows, the trend series shows some growth, but also a slowing rate of positive movement. And RBA Governor Philip Lowe warned that on one hand, interest rates could remain low for decades, but warned Australians may be starting on a fresh binge of mortgage debt that could expose one of the nation's biggest economic vulnerabilities. We've made choices which give us structurally high housing prices and structurally high levels of debt relative to our income. That's what we've done, and it's created a vulnerability because we've got a lot of debt on our balance sheets relative to income, he said. Well, duh, that's the result of your monetary policy, Governor. And the vulnerability is here now. Lending standards need to be tightened again as mortgage stress and financial pressures from low income growth, high cost growth, and a stalled economy all bite and wake APRA up too as they are asleep. But then again, the bullish Christopher Joy is at it again, arguing that recent rate cuts should lead to a total 20% rise in home prices ahead, meaning that there is another 12% to go. but this is based on flawed RBA modelling and does not take into account the real financial footprint of households. And we discussed the mortgage stress distribution in our recent mapping show, which, by the way, we plan to revisit and cover other areas of the country as requested. Meantime, watch our show, Mapping Mortgage Stress. And for those who asked, here is a blown-up version of the key to the maps for reference. A report came out this week that Australian regulators plan to introduce mandatory stress tests soon that will look at the impact of climate change on banks, insurers, and the $3 trillion pension fund industry. The tests, to be based on measures being developed in England, have been in the works for some time, but their introduction has been hastened after the devastating bushfire season. Economists expect recent bushfires to drag on gross domestic product by 0.1 to 0.4 percentage points through to March 2020, with agricultural, retail, tourism and construction the hardest hit. As parts of the stress test, banks will be required to run risk assessments of their loan books and business models under various climate scenarios. APRA said that the development of climate change stress tests was a key measure as it boosts scrutiny of how financial institutions manage their climate risks. We intend to release a letter to the industry outlining the next phase of our regulatory response to climate risk in a few weeks, an APRA spokesman told Reuters on Monday. It's not clear if banks will be required to publicly disclose results of the stress tests mandated by APRA. Well, we think they should. And in December, the Bank of England said Britain's top banks and insurers should be tested together for the first time in 2021 to quantify the potential financial damage from climate change. And so do the markets. The ASX rose 0.43% to 5,911, while the ASX financials rose 1.43% higher on the prospect of mortgage loan growth following CBA's announced releases. It closed at 6,486. CBA jumped this week by 7.3%, while AMP rose more than 4% despite the announced losses, which were expected. The VIX fell 7.4% to 12.29, indicating risk is off for now, while the Aussie-US dollar is up a little to 67.12, having spent some time lower recently. That is a 0.6% rise across the week, and the first week it's risen this year. It recorded a multi-year low near 66.60 to the start of the week. The euro Aussie dollar closed at 1.6137, down 1.63% across the week. The Aussie gold cross rose 0.58% to 2,359, while the Aussie Bitcoin cross was up 1.76% to 15,483. So the market misdirection continues, despite the real emerging issues surrounding the virus and weak economic data here in Australia. But the point is, until the bad news really hits home, things will continue to bubble higher. But the risk of a significant correction rises as prices go higher. And that is as true for financial markets as it is for property. Meantime, look over here, not over there. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.